Krishna. Pennsylvania is actually much bigger than the size of the
Pennsylvania.
And the cultivation of energy, the sun's down the side of the Pennsylvania. Then she goes to the city, Tanya Kabunis, and the city of Deutsche Gerada. She was very war, but the Pennsylvania. Shri Hare Krishna, Gopinath Swami Kendu Hare Kendu Giri Gopa Jandhari Shri Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai Shri Navadvipa Dham Ki Jai Gangamayi Ki Jai Jamuna Mayi Ki Jai Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Sosti Devi Ki Jai Samarega Bhakti Kendu Ki Jai All glorious to your Samadha All glorious to your Samadha All glorious is Samatha Bhakti. All glorious to Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga Nithari Gauranga.
It was about Guru Maharaj.
Very good.
Yes.
In the most unfortunate situation, and so seeming like an unfortunate situation, it can be the speed of our fortune.
How encouraging.
It's something similar. The mother of Guru Maharaj, she took from the pot of poison, took the jewel, and polished it.
Yeah. Even from someone, she found something wonderful and true. From someone who is bitterly opposed to Guru Maharaj, she found something good and practical to apply.
Yes.
Borrowed and has to be returned at some point.
It's like
Okay. So what was the last thing that happened and the last verse that we read? Does anyone remember? Dhruva left home. Actually his mother didn't, as it was mentioned yesterday, his mother didn't say, Dhruva, go to the forest. You're a 5-year-old boy, you can do it. Go to the forest. No. She actually explained that he should take shelter of Krishna and render service to Krishna and execute your allotted occupation and put the Lord in your heart. But Dhruva's mood was, well, the Lord isn't in my heart now. I don't have very much a conception of Him. So how can I get that? Where can I find Him to place Him in my heart? And the reply was, well, great sages, when they want to find the Lord, they go to the forest. Because the forest is free from the lower modes of material nature. And it's easier to focus one's consciousness upon the very subtle endeavor of finding the Lord. And to that Prabhupada commented, when the Vaishnavas, the Gaudiya Vaishnavas want to find the Lord, the forest that they go to is the forest of Vrindavan. And there, to find the Lord, they take shelter of Srimati Radharani.
I was wondering that now while you were talking about the question of anxiety, like in the big cities there is so much anxiety, but what about the anxiety of forest dwellers in terms of lions and tigers? They are running away from the city, but it seems like there are other components there.
It's true. So don't go to the forest unless you know how to deal with the lions and tigers and the elephants. Actually, when the sages used to practice yoga in the forest, one of the reasons they used to sit on a deer cloth because of the deer skin was the particular quality of the deer skin. It would repel snakes. So Dhruva went to the forest. And when he had his inspiration, when he had his instruction, he didn't wait even for a moment, practically speaking. He left immediately because the window of opportunity or the door for us to find Krishna, it opens by Krishna's mercy, and it opens in the most where you'd expect it least to be coming from sometimes, like this misfortune of the insult by Sarucci. But somehow when a door opens, Krishna in one way or another tells you, this is the door of opportunity. But yet, he doesn't push you, he doesn't force you to walk through that door. But as soon as we understand what that door is, out of our free will, if we want to get to the other side, we should walk through that door quickly, immediately. Because just as spontaneously as that door opened, it can just as easily vanish. No more freedom, no more choice, no more door. Just entanglement. So Dhruva walked through immediately. And he walked into the forest, this young boy. Now, the question is, what did he do? Now, okay, you go to the forest. It took bravery for Dhruva to go to the forest, or you could say it took a great amount of innocence, and in one sense, that's the easiest part, leaving what you have, and then you walk out the door and go to the forest, but then you get to the forest. And then what do you do next? Look for Krishna. Now, where do you look? And even in Vrindavan, Prabhupada said, you won't find him in Loy Bazaar. You won't find Krishna there. But how to go about finding Krishna when one leaves the security of one's home and circumstances in the sincere and determined effort to find Krishna, what do you do next? Where do you look? Well, the main point on the side of the seeker, the searcher, is to be sincerely looking. And then in text 25, which is practically the first verse that we read today, we hear of Krishna's reciprocation with the sincere attempt of Dhruva. What did he do? The great sage Narada, this is text 25. Raise your hand if you brought your sheet with you, the sheets of paper that we humbly requested that you bring every day, because the verses are there. The great sage Narada, he overheard this news. What news? That Dhruva, the boy, had gone to the forest to search for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So noble, the greatest journey in life. And understanding all the activities of Dhruva Maharaj, why he had went, his nature, Narada Muni was struck with wonder. He was amazed that this young boy was so sincere, so determined. And remember, and don't forget, that his motivation, it's not exactly clear at this time what was pushing him to go to the forest, but we'll hear it very, very clearly, very soon, what was in his mind. It was materialistic. He wanted a kingdom, a great kingdom, a greater kingdom than anyone. Simply materialism. But he had turned to the Supreme Lord to get that. And now the question was, how in the world was he going to find him? He desired, but he himself, in fact, didn't have the capacity to find the Lord. His capacity was only the sincerity of his endeavor. Narada approached Dhruva, and touching the boy's head with his all-virtuous hand, he spoke as follows. We'll read from the second half of Prabhupada's purport. Because one may say, Narada heard the news, but how did he hear the news? They were so unfortunate in that day. They had no internet, no broadband connections, no mobile phones. How did they survive? How is it possible that for thousands of years people survived without a computer? Isn't it astounding? And people, do they have those navigation devices with the global...
Practically everyone.
Everyone has it.
Practically.
And can you imagine, people were so unfortunate previously, they had to find their way around without global navigation systems? And somehow or another, amazing, inconceivable it is, they managed to do it. Even people used to know how to add and subtract without calculators. And multiply too. I once saw a cartoon that said there was a school teacher yelling frustratedly at the student. And the teacher was saying, because one day your calculator may break, that's why you have to learn how to add. So how did Narada find out the news that Dhruva was in the forest? Prabhupada explains in his purport. It may be explained in this way. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is present in everyone's heart. And as soon as he understands that a living entity is serious about entering devotional service, he sends his representative. In this way, Narada was sent to Dhruva Maharaj. This is explained in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhakti Lata Bija. By the grace of the spiritual master in Krishna, one can enter into devotional service. Because of Dhruva Maharaja's determination, Krishna, the Super Soul, immediately sent his representative, Narada, to initiate him. So how did Narada hear the news? By the grace of Krishna, who is situated in everyone's heart, who is Sarvajna, who knows all. And what did Narada say? How wonderful, this is text 26, how wonderful are the powerful Kshatriyas, the warriors, because Dhruva was a warrior. He was the king's son, and he had such an incredible spirit. Narada said, they cannot tolerate, this is the spirit of a Kshatriya. They have huge false egos, actually, but they need those false egos to protect. They cannot tolerate someone in their kingdom, someone who has surrendered to them, being in any way leaned upon improperly, because that person has surrendered to them. They need a very powerful sense of ahankar. So Narada said, how wonderful are the powerful Kshatriyas. They cannot tolerate even a slight infringement upon their prestige. Just imagine, he was amazed. This boy is only a small child, 5 years old. Yet harsh words from his stepmother proved unbearable to him. The great sage Narada, he was thinking like that, and then he told Dhruva, my dear boy, you're only a little boy whose attachment is to sports and other frivolities. You like to play. Why are you so affected by words insulting your honor? My dear Dhruva, 28, if you feel that your sense of honor has been insulted, you still have no cause for dissatisfaction. This kind of dissatisfaction is another feature of the illusory energy. In other words, if your consciousness is so developed, because if you want to act like an ordinary boy, what are you doing here being insulted? Go and play. But if your consciousness is so developed that you know the difference between an insult and praise, and it so deeply affects you, then your consciousness should be so developed that you can hear this kind of instruction. This kind of dissatisfaction that you are feeling due to insult is another feature of the illusory energy. We feel happy when we're praised. We feel terrible when we're insulted, like our heart has been pierced by a spear. But this is just Maya, it has nothing to do with us, Narada Muni said. Every living entity is controlled by his previous actions. We have our karma. The happiness, the distress, they both come. One day one comes, one day, that same day, the opposite may come. It's just the way life is, my boy. And therefore, there are different varieties of life, different types of body, and according to our karma, we get a particular type of body, and different proportions of suffering and enjoyment come to us. So if you're so developed in your sense of prestige, etc., then consider this point. This is just the actions of your karma. And if it doesn't happen to you in this way, you try to avoid it, and you're due to some particular suffering, you avoid, try to avoid one situation, it follows you. Srila Prabhupada spoke of a Bengali saying, when you go to the forest, you take your If you're trying to avoid a situation and you run from it, you may even run to the forest, but you take your forehead with you. And in those days in India, people used to read your fortune, not only by the palm, Jyotish, but just by looking at your forehead. Maybe that's why the ladies were always like this. Uh-oh, they'll find out. Isn't that frightening? Just by looking at your forehead? Hello, how are you? Had a bad day today, didn't you? All our enjoyment, our suffering is just our karma. He's speaking truth to this young boy. He's speaking truth, but yet, what he's doing is testing him. Testing specifically his determination. Because if Dhruva, and we shall speak about this in more detail, Krishna willing, in a few moments, if he's actually going to achieve the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he's going to have to be very determined. And he's going to have to pass not one test, and not 10 tests, not 1,000 tests. It's continuous. And what are the tests? What is the meaning of the tests that every practitioner who is seriously attempting to find the Lord, seriously attempting to elevate his consciousness, what is the test that one has to pass? The test very much a one of desire. Oh, I want to find Krishna. I only want to serve Krishna. I'll do anything to serve Krishna. And then Krishna says, oh, really? Let's see. And then the roof caves in, or who knows what, or sometimes quite unexpectedly, you may win the lottery. And then, as Prabhupada once said, one devotee asked Prabhupada, that I heard that yogis, in a letter, he asked Prabhupada, I heard that yogis know a method of changing iron to gold. And if you could tell us that method, we'd be able to put so much nice gold upon the altars for Krishna's pleasure. And Prabhupada replied in the letter, yes, there is a yogic method. And he explained the yogic method. And it involves ingesting mercury, which happens to be poisonous if you're not a yogi. And then he said, but we shouldn't bother with these things, because the tendency is when we have gold, we forget Krishna. So sometimes the test is like this, and sometimes the test is you get so much in a different way, although it seems mostly it's like this, but sometimes it's the other way too. Oh, what do you really want? Oh, you want Krishna? Well, let's see. Let's actually see. Let you yourself see what you actually want and what it will take to push you, to knock you, to change your desire. Because if you actually want to serve the lotus feet of Krishna, it can happen as it did with Kadvanga Maharaj in half a moment. But one needs only be completely serious and completely determined and unflinching in one's desire, undeviating. That's all. Then it doesn't make a difference if the world caves in or you win $10 million. These things, one sees them in the perspective of eternity. They will come, they will go. We can look at our entire life from the best moments to the worst moments, and they came and they went, and in the face of 10 years or 50 years or 100 years, what to speak of 1,000 or 10,000 or 100,000 years or 200,000 years, they're all simply the good and the bad, simply insignificant. And one has to see from that perspective and be tolerant of the goods and bads that will come, like the coming and going of the rains and the ocean. They will come and they will go. And during the comings and goings of our karma, and each of us have different karma, each of us have allotted to us, just like there's no two people in this room who look exactly the same, even twins, identical twins, are in many ways, so many ways different. We each have our own allotment of happiness and distress. Just the way it is. So Narada is testing Yuga. Is this boy, this young boy, serious enough that he's going to be able to maintain the fixity of mind required to achieve this very difficult goal that he wants to achieve, to find the Lord, to get the kingdom that he wants? Does he have that quality of determination? And Dhruva, as it turns out, he does. And he's so fixed, and he's so determined. And again, he's determined to see the Lord, but for materialistic motives, but he has that quality of incredibly focus, vyavya satnika buddhi, laser focus of determined intelligence that has been evoked by misery. And he's able to maintain that. And he will achieve his results of seeing the Lord within 6 months. But we're getting a little ahead. Now we'll continue talking about the tests. Narada Muni speaks good philosophy to him. Read just from the end of Prabhupada's purport to 28. Narada Rishi first of all wanted to impress upon Dhruva Maharaj that he was only a child. He should not have been affected by words of insult or honor. And if one was so developed as to understand honor and insult, then this understanding should have been applied in his own life. He should have known that honor and dishonor are both destined only by one's previous actions, one's karma. Therefore, one should not be sorry or happy in any circumstance, because they will all come and they will all go. 29. The process of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is very wonderful. One who is intelligent should accept that process and be satisfied with whatever comes, favorable or unfavorable, by his supreme will. The processes of giving out one's karma according to one's previous actions by the Lord, who is the ultimately the dispenser, even though it's by the law of nature. So in one sense, it's just the law acting. It's quite impersonal. But it is up to him, ultimately, what one gets, and positively favorable. And one should just accept it, Narada said. One should be intelligent enough to accept that this process is the process of just our karma. No one, there are no innocent victims in one sense. It's just our karma rolling through, and just accept it. Accepted as Krishna. Now you have decided. So he's telling the boy to go home. Now you have decided to undertake the mystic process. initiation under the instruction of your mother, just to achieve the mercy of the Lord. But in my opinion, such austerities are not possible for any ordinary man. It is very difficult to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Narada Muni continued. After trying, he's trying to discourage him. Why? Again, he wants to see how determined Narada Muni is, because he's going to give him a very difficult process of self-realization. Fast, but difficult. And unless Narada Muni is prepared to, regardless of how difficult it is, unless he has the fixedness of mind to focus himself on the process that Narada Muni is going to give him, he's not going to be successful. So before Narada gives him the process, he's testing to see the quality of determination within the boy. So continuing on this discouraging mood, where he's saying that you want to practice mystic yoga, but it's so difficult. In text 31, he says, after trying this process for many, many births, not years, not hours, but births, and remaining while one is practicing this process unattached to material contamination, these yogis placing themselves continually in trance, keeping their consciousness dissociated from the material world, and executing many types of austerities, difficulties, placing the body in difficulty. And what happens when you place your body in difficulty? The mind rebels. So unless your mind is very strong and firm and determined, you will not be able to practice the physical austerities to continue with the process. So he's testing Dhruva's mind, testing his determination. By speaking the truth, many yogis, for many births, they have practiced this yoga, these austerities, and they were unable to find the end of the path of God realization. Because the purpose of the austerities, of the yoga, isn't the yoga and the austerities, not the asanas, not even the pranayama, etc. It is the goal. The purpose is the goal, which is the samadhi, the focus of the consciousness, unwaveringly on Krishna's beautiful form. So, so many yogis have spent so much time, so many births, with this attempt, performing so many terrible austerities, and they have not achieved it. So then Narada says, Ato na bhakti tam hisha nirbandastava nishpala yatishyati bhavan kale svayasam samupastite. The word yatishyati means in the future. So go home now. Go home, my dear boy. This is very difficult, what you're attempting. I appreciate your sincerity. Very good, little boy. Now go home. The translation, 32. For this reason, my dear boy, you should not endeavor for this. It's too difficult. It will not be successful. Why put in so much effort into something that is so difficult to do? Persons so much more mature and determined than you have tried and failed, and you are just a little boy. Go home. It is better that you go home, and when you are grown up, by the mercy of the Lord, you will get a chance for these mystic performances. At that time, you may execute this function. At the end of Prabhupada's purport, he says, the great sage Narada is instructing Dhruva Maharaj just to test him. And interestingly enough, again, he's not testing him by teaching him a false philosophy, but he's testing him by speaking the truth. Actually, what Narada is explaining, Prabhupada explaining, continues. The direct order is that from any point of life, one should begin rendering devotional service. But it is the duty of the spiritual master to test the disciple to see how seriously he desires to execute devotional service, then he may be initiated. So the truth is that Dhruva should not, or anyone for that matter, should not go home and take to materialistic life thinking that when I'm older or old, then I'll be serious enough to take the Krishna consciousness, spiritual life. This is not the proper instruction, actually. Prahlad Maharaj explains this, Komaram Acharet Pragyo. Pragyo means knowledge. As soon as the realization comes to you of the nature of the material world and the nature of spiritual life, even if you were a komara, even if you were a young boy, komaram acharet pragyo means knowledge, pragyo, dhamman bhagavataniha, immediately should begin practicing Bhagavad Dharma. Bhagavad Dharma means Krishna consciousness. Bhagavad Dharma means the process of pleasing the Supreme Lord. That is what Krishna consciousness means. It's the dharma, or the activity, or roughly translated, the religion, whose essence is to please the Supreme Lord. That is the meaning of religion. That is the meaning of spiritual life. To change the center of our existence from me, false ego, based on me imagining that everything, that I am the center of anything, and then placing Krishna's pleasure in the center. So komaram acharet pragyo dharman bhagavataniha durabham manushya janma. Why is this true? Because a human birth is durabham, means very rare and very difficult to attain. And with this verse, Tarappa Dhruvam Artadam, with this birth, although a human birth is temporary like any other birth, but with a human birth, it has the special facility of one has the capacity to attain the eternal. So therefore, one should use the facility of a human birth to make this endeavor very seriously. And as soon as one awakens to this point, regardless of whether one is a young boy or an old man or whatever, one should immediately take to it. That is intelligence, and that is the true instruction. And Narada was being very indirect in his advice, just to see what the true desire of Dhruva was. Again, in spiritual life, one takes to it, and very often, when one takes to spiritual life, one doesn't really know what one is getting into, how complicated it is, or how difficult it is, or that it's going to take really a long time. And one takes to it somewhat romantically, as Dhruva left his house and went to the forest. Because again, it's easier to walk out the door, and that you can feel really good as you're walking out the door. But then you're there, outside the door. And then what do you do? And then what do you do when something difficult happens? But Bhagavad Dharma, and at this point of Dhruva Maharaj's pastime, one of the points is that when one is sincerely trying, even though one may not really know what one is doing when one walks out the door, or desires to walk out the door of one's material life, or somehow or another gets forced out of the door of material life into an attempt for spiritual life, one is walking into the hands of Krishna, actually. And Krishna helps. He makes the arrangements so that we can advance. If one, at one time even, this is that first that I won't be able to remember right now, something for Sanam. But Yavam Yatsed Se Yasi Se Tavam Azmi, if one time, even sincerely calls out to Krishna, yatche means praise to Krishna, saying, Tava Azmi, I am yours. Krishna says, that that person who wants a moment of sincerity, perhaps in a lifetime of insincerity, a moment of insincerity, one time calling out to Krishna, I am yours. Krishna says, I never forget that person. Abhayam, vidam yatad etan vartam mama. It is my promise that such a person, I will award fearlessness to that person. And that is my firmest vow. Again, before we can actually take the greatest jump, and there's only one great jump in this world, and that jump is the place in having the strength, the faith, the trust, to place Krishna's pleasure in the center of our own life, to surrender to Him. That can only be done if one trusts the nature of the person that we are placing ourselves in the hands of. So this is the nature of that person. If one time calls out to Him, He never forgets that. He doesn't, as we said that other verse from Bhaktivedanta Sindhu, that He doesn't take one's offenses seriously, rather, if someone does a little bit of service, He takes that as very great, and He doesn't become His enemy's enemy. He doesn't become envious of His enemy. He has those qualities and coolness and steadiness of character and mind. But Narada is testing Dhruva. And he continues, one should try to keep one himself satisfied, and this all is good advice. One should try to keep himself satisfied in any condition of life, whether distress or happiness, which is offered by the Supreme Will. A person who endures in this way is able to cross over the darkness of nescience very easily. Tateno kampam susumetsumano bhunsine vapa kutava bhakam vidbhagva podam vidadara namaste jivateo mukti pade sudhaya bhakam. Prabhupada says in his purport, instead of being attached to the circumstantial happiness and distress resulting from pious or impious activities, if we want to get out of the clutches of this nescience, this ignorance, then whatever position we are put in by the will of the Lord, we should accept. Thus, if we simply surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that means giving ourselves to Him in regardless of whatever position we're in. If we do that, if we simply surrender, it's not The purpose isn't to just accept the difficulties of one's life and say, I accept them, I don't do anything about them. No, we should surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and act in such a way that He is pleased, considering Him our protector. If we surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we shall get out of the clutches of this material existence. And then Narada concludes his words of advice to Dhruva by saying, every man should act like this. All this is such good advice. When he meets a person more qualified than himself, he should be very pleased. When he meets someone less qualified than himself, he should be compassionate towards them. And when he meets someone equal to himself, he should make friendship with him. In this way, one is never affected by the threefold miseries of this material world. I'll read part of the comment of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur on this verse, because these instructions are very good. One should feel joyful on meeting a superior person, and one should not envy him. One should feel compassion, not contempt, on meeting an inferior. One should feel friendship with an equal and not be competitive. If because of one's faults, one's own faults, one does not attain the association with a superior person, one should desire to attain that. So despite the truth born of instructions of the mode of goodness, despite the truth of Narada's words, these were not the proper instructions for Dhruva, and Narada knew that. Now Dhruva is going to respond. He says, My dear Lord Naradaji, for a person whose heart is disturbed by the material conditions of happiness and distress, happiness is born of what mode of material nature? Goodness. And distress? Passion. The result of the mode of passion is distress. So a person whose consciousness or heart is disturbed by these two material conditions, happiness and distress, passion and goodness, whatever you have so kindly explained for attainment of peace of mind is certainly a good instruction. But as far as I am concerned, I am covered by ignorance, neither passion nor goodness. And this kind of philosophy does not touch my heart. He's telling him, Narada told Dhruva, go home, don't try and worship the Lord, don't try and please the Lord. The point being that Dhruva had so many material desires, and Prabhupada answers that point in his purport. Our material desires, our impurities in the heart, a disqualification for taking up the path of devotional service. And the answer is no. So Prabhupada says in the beginning or in the middle of his first purport, it is not a fact, however, that those who have material desires are prohibited from worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the essential instruction from the life of Dhruva. There is no disqualification for approaching Krishna. One need only be determined. It doesn't make a difference what motive is pushing you from behind. One must simply be determined to take shelter of Krishna, even to get that thing, even though it may be material. Now the recommendation here isn't that we should approach Krishna
to have all our material desires fulfilled. Rather, it's that even if we have material desires, we should approach Krishna. And we will get our material desires fulfilled. We will get them fulfilled as Krishna wants. And if Krishna, as we hear more of the pastime, if Krishna is so kind and reciprocates so wonderfully, giving himself, showing himself to someone who approaches him with determination, but whose consciousness is full simply of material desires, just imagine how he's going to reciprocate with someone who approaches him with love. Just imagine. If he gives himself, practically speaking, to Dhruva, at the end he'll come, he'll give Dhruva some benedictions, and then he'll leave. But the greatest devotees who love Krishna and approach Krishna not to gain anything material or not even to please him, but to love him so completely, like the residents of Vrindavan, they capture the supreme unlimited Lord so completely that he cannot leave. He cannot leave, he can never leave. Padamekam nagacchati. He cannot take one step out of Vrindavan. He is bound tightly, so tightly by the love of the residents of Vrindavan. He cannot leave even one step. This is the person who we are attempting to serve. He's that kind of Supreme Lord. He is not a cruel dictator who has some kind of psychological problem that he creates all the living entities that unless they serve him and worship him, they can't be happy. He's not like that. Rather, the living entities, the souls who take shelter of him, he raises their ecstasy, the capacity of their ecstasy to the highest point, even higher than his own ecstasy. He becomes controlled, captured by the love of the residents of Vrindavan, by the love of those who love him, full-hearted selflessness. He is that kind of Supreme Lord. He has the most excellent, wonderful, all-attractive qualities. It's not only that Krishna is all-attractive because he's so beautiful and unlimitedly powerful and unlimitedly wealthy, but he has all the qualities in his personality that attract. He has the kind of nature that everyone is longing to find that person to give themselves to. He has exactly that kind of nature. So Dhruva, at this point, is not ready for this at all. He's not even ready for good instructions of detachment and to keep your mind steady, born of the mode of goodness or even of passion. His heart is so deeply infected by ignorance that he does not wish well for his stepmother. He's angry like anything at her. He wants to teach even his father a lesson. You haven't protested when she said, "I can't sit on the throne." Well, I'm going to show you who's going to sit on the throne. I'm going to sit on a throne of a kingdom even better than yours, bigger than yours, bigger than your father's, bigger than your grandfather's. He's really getting carried away, actually. Especially because his great grandfather was Lord Brahma. And Lord Brahma was the Lord of the whole universe. So in his childishness and in his childishness enmity and envy, he's saying, "I'm going to have a kingdom that's bigger than the universe, bigger than everything." It's childish. It's childish and it's born of enmity and envy and ignorance, just as he's saying. But he
he has this wonderful quality of fixedness of determination to what? To take all these, whatever he has in his consciousness, he's fully determined to take that to Krishna, and he won't deviate from that in the slightest. Whether it rains, whether it storms, or whether the sun shines, whether the universe falls apart, whether this, whether that, whether lollipops rain from the sky, he doesn't care. He wants one thing. He's undistractable. He will not be distracted. Think of what it will take, what it would take to have that kind of determination. What would it take? You have to have such an intensity of desire. If one's desire is perfected and pure, and one is fully, therefore, Rupa Goswami includes the verse Tatra Loyam Api Muyam Ekalam, that the only qualification for attaining the Lord is Loyam. Ekamulam, ekalam, tatraloyam, it means greed, intensity of I want. We're sort of taught we shouldn't want so many things. But here Dhruva is teaching us something completely different. It's okay to want anything on a particular level, great, small, but you must want it intensely, and you must take that and bring it to the Lord with full determination. With that intensity of desire, I think I'd like to go to Krishnaloka. It'd probably be really nice there, but maybe a little bit later, you know, because first I have to do this, and then I have to do that. And of course, it's obvious that if you want to achieve success in anything in this world, you have to be focused. You have to perform austerities. You have to be determined. There's nothing that's really easy to attain. So, because of Dhruva's intensity of desire, he achieves complete success in achieving his desire in 6 months. And that makes him so miserable. Because in the end he realizes, I have such a foolish desire. I wanted something insignificant, like a kingdom greater than the universe. Something completely insignificant when I could have had the most wonderful thing. But how Krishna turns that around at the end and gives him everything, including his lotus feet, you shall hear. So he continues. My dear Lord, Dhruva is speaking. My dear Lord, I am very impudent for not accepting your instructions. What does impudent mean? How do you say it in Greek? I am very impudent for not accepting your instructions. But this is not my fault. Not taking responsibility for his own actions, huh? Okay. But it is not my fault. It is due to my having been born in a Kshatriya family. I have this spirit. My stepmother, Saruchi, has pierced my heart with her harsh words. Therefore, your valuable instructions do not stand in my heart. Prabhupada's purport, we'll read the first paragraph. It is said that the heart or mind is just like an earthen pot, an Indian-made clay pot. Did you ever take an Indian clay pot and drop it? What happens?
Break.
It not only breaks, but it really breaks. It shatters. And you cannot put it together again. The heart is just like an earthen pot. Once broken, it cannot be repaired by any means. Dhruva Maharaj gave this example to Narada Muni. He said that his heart, having been pierced by the arrows of his stepmother's harsh words, felt so broken that nothing seemed valuable but his desire to counteract her insult. He wanted revenge. His stepmother had said that because he was born from the womb of Suniti, a neglected queen of Maharaj Uttanapad, Dhruva Maharaj was not fit to sit either on the throne or on his father's lap. In other words, according to his stepmother, he could not be declared king. And Dhruva Maharaj's determination, therefore, was to become king of a planet exalted even beyond that possessed by Lord Brahma, the greatest of the demigods. Dhruva continued, O learned Brahmana, I want to occupy a position more exalted than any other, than any yet achieved within the three worlds by anyone, even by my fathers and grandfathers. If you will oblige me, kindly advise me of an honest path to follow by which I can achieve the goal of my life. Prabhupada's purport. When Dhruva Maharaj refused to accept the Brahminical instructions of Narada Muni, meant for one who was peaceful and in the mode of goodness, naturally the next question would be, what sort of instructions he wanted. So even before Narada Muni asked, Dhruva Maharaj expressed his heartfelt desire. His father, of course, was the emperor of the entire world. And his grandfather, Lord Brahma, his great-grandfather, was the creator of the universe. And Dhruva Maharaj expressed his desire to possess a kingdom better than those of his father and grandfather. He wanted more than the universe. He frankly stated that he wanted a kingdom which had no competitor within the three worlds, namely the higher, middle, and lower planetary systems. The greatest personality within the universe is Lord Brahma, and Dhruva Maharaj wanted a position even greater than his. He wanted to take advantage of Narada Muni's presence because he knew very well that if Narada Muni, the greatest devotee of Lord Krishna, could bless him or show him the path, then certainly he would be able to occupy a more exalted position than any person within the three worlds. Thus he wanted help from Naradaji to achieve that position. Dhruva Maharaj wanted a position greater than that of Lord Brahma. This was practically an impossible proposition. Now please listen to this. This was practically an impossible position. But by pleasing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, a devotee can achieve even the impossible. One particular point mentioned here is that Dhruva Maharaj wanted to occupy an exalted position not by hook or by crook, not by cheating by any means, but by honest means. This indicates that if Krishna offered him such a position, then he would accept it. That is the nature of a devotee. He may desire material gain, but he accepts it only if Krishna offers it. Dhruva Maharaj was sorry to refuse the instruction of Narada Muni. Therefore, he requested him to be merciful to him by showing a path by which he could fulfill his mind's desires. So of course, this is the fourth canto of the Bhagavatam, and after the fourth canto of the Bhagavatam is the fifth, and then the sixth, and then the seventh, and then the eighth, and then the ninth, and then in the tenth canto, one gets to Vrindavan. That is what the Bhagavatam is leading us to. But to go through the path of Bhagavad Dharma, which is so inclusive that everyone can take to it, one must also really know this fourth canto instruction very deeply. That whatever my condition is, I can approach Krishna and perform devotional service. Akama sava kama va moksha kama udaradi chabrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusha para. When yesterday I gave the example again of the going to the mouth of the Ganga, Gomukh, which means cow mouth, exactly, because it actually, the glacier that the Ganga comes from, it's actually shaped like the mouth of a cow. And I told you about that extremely cold death, but I think I forgot to tell you what the point of that was. It had to do with this verse. I mentioned that there were icebergs in the water, it was so cold, and not only were there icebergs, there were huge boulders, and the force of the Ganga is so powerful in Gomukh that it can push the huge boulders, it pushes them down the river. Big, huge rocks, heavy, huge rocks. But the force of the water is so powerful that it pushes them. It pushes them. So that's the example used in this verse. Whatever one's situation is, if one is full of material desires or has desires for liberation, still, tivrena bhakti yogena, tivra means with power, with determination, with focus, one should worship bhakti yogena, with bhakti, with devotion, with devotional feeling, with love, ultimately. One should worship the Purushottara, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and all success will be achieved. All the boulders of the obstacles in our devotional service will be pushed aside by the Tivra Bhakti, the powerful, determined Bhakti of the devotee. So we may not be able to do that, or we may be able to do that to one degree or another. But the message is that we should try our best. We should try our best. So I'll just read the final verse in this, and there's no purport that I'll read. So he's approaching Narada Muni, and he said, "Please bless me. My dear Lord, you are a worthy son of Lord Brahma, and you travel playing on your musical instrument, the Veena, for the welfare of the entire universe. You are like the sun, which rotates in the universe for the benefit of all living beings. So please bless me with the instructions, with the proper instructions, so I can achieve my desire to take shelter of the Lord, to attain this incredibly huge kingdom, so I can get even with my, I can teach my father and Saruchi and everyone a lesson. I want this huge kingdom. Tell me how I can get this by taking shelter of the Lord." Okay. Let's see if there's anything else I wanted to read. There was. But I won't. Thank you. Any questions or comments?
you're addressing the question of determination test. So Narada Muni tested the Dhruva Maharaj. So, or the Lord tested the Dhruva Maharaj. So there are some aspects of this test, and maybe you can speak about it. It's one, this test was for Dhruva to strengthen his determination, or the Lord tested him to realize, because he may know already that he has a determination. Or the test was to show us how to be determined on the path to come to Lord.
My understanding was that Dhruva, a living entity, has free will. And Narada Muni was testing to see what is the best instruction for him. Dhruva wanted to attain a kingdom, something very great, and he had a process in mind by which he would attain it. Going to the forest, finding the Lord, and Narada mentions actually mystic yoga. And this mystic yoga, this type of yoga, is very, very, very difficult to do. So unless one is completely determined, one will not be successful in doing that. And it's so discouraging to not be successful. So better than trying something that's too difficult, that you could maybe gain the Lord very, very, very quickly perhaps, but if it's too difficult for you, you're not determined enough, then go home and come back when you try to cultivate the mode of goodness, and you can try again when you're a little older. So it seems like he was looking more for the proper instruction to give him according to, because the instruction has to be according to the mentality of the person who is going to achieve that instruction for the result to be successful. That's my understanding.
So this is you always heard that this is to Narada Muni testing the Dhruva Maharaj. But then sometimes we say that Krishna is testing us. So if Krishna is testing us, he's in our heart, he knows our determination. So what is the point of this testing us? Is it to strengthen our faith?
Well, this in the last Govardhan retreat, I spoke about this, so it's quite fresh in my mind. There's many different reasons why Krishna will test us. But the kind of test that it sounds like you're talking about, the most basic test, it's in school. Like in school, the teacher gives an assessment examination to the student. So although examinations in school have turned into very competitive events that cause everyone anxiety, there are two other reasons for examinations that are really more to the point of what examinations or assessments are meant for. The first one is so that the teacher can tell the effectiveness of his teaching methodologies. Because if I'm teaching very, very, very well, I think, but the students aren't learning what I'm trying to teach them, then I need to adjust what I'm doing. But that's not the kind of assessment or test that is the prime reason for a test. And the prime reason for a test is not to strengthen the faith of the student or his determination, but he can see himself how he is doing. Because if I tell you, you're doing this wrong and this wrong and this wrong and this wrong, the way the false ego is constructed, we don't like to listen. But if we have an examination that forces us to look at our own position and what specifically is being tested, just as Dhruva was being tested in his determination to take shelter of Krishna to achieve his result. That's the prime thing that is being tested for each and every one of us. That when a difficult time comes, or a very, very good time comes, where do we go? Where does our consciousness, where does our mind, where does our heart go for shelter? Because that point where we unflinchingly turn to Krishna is a wonderful and exalted point. And that is where bhakti begins. So how close actual bhakti begins? So how close we are to that point? We get tested 100 times a day, practically speaking, if we're willing to open our consciousness and watch for it. Do we take shelter of Krishna, or do we become angry at everyone else? Do we take shelter of Krishna, and Krishna, please help me, I'm such a fallen soul, and on, whatever, and hold more tightly to the lotus feet of Krishna, or do we become, or we take shelter of eating food from the refrigerator, or turning on the television, or whatever, intoxication, or whatever. So these, if we understand what's being tested, and no one knows, these self-assessments are very private and personal. So we can see for ourselves what we need work on. And then perhaps we see that the reason why I don't take shelter of Krishna is because I don't really have very much of a desire to take shelter of Krishna. And then we work in one way. Or we may see that when the mode of ignorance, because my mind is so crazy and so passionate, or this or else, or my heart is so broken, it's been broken into an earthen pot and then stepped on 100 times and cracked even more, that even though I want to take shelter of Krishna, I have some software problems, some viruses and bugs in my program. So then maybe we have to use a good virus protection system and remove them so that we can do that. But the purpose should be clear in our mind that this is what I want to do, and we should always be attempting to take shelter of Krishna. Because that is what devotional service means. Turning to Krishna. Turning to Krishna. Not turning towards any other false place that we know can't give us the shelter that we're looking for. So that's what's being tested. And what happens when we... Sometimes it's more valuable to fail the test and pass a test, in the sense that failing a test points out exactly where we need work. And then we try our best to take a step forward taking a step to Krishna and taking shelter of Him. So that's what's being tested, and that's the purpose, the prime purpose of assessment is so we can get a glimpse of how we are doing on the path. We should know what the goal is. The first goal is this, taking shelter of Krishna. And after that, we say the bhakti begins. That means after that, we can start developing love for Krishna. But first we have to learn to take shelter of Him. And before we can do that, we have to develop some trust for Him. And then we have to learn how to control our mind. And we have to learn how to hold on tightly despite everything. Or maybe when Krishna is by his own spell, sometimes he puts us in situations where we have no other alternative. Sometimes it comes to deciding whether you're an atheist or a theist. And I don't mean that even in a ridiculous way, because very often we're somewhere in between. We'd sort of like to be theists, or sometimes we'd like to be atheists. because it would make life a lot easier, we think. And it's so hard to trust Krishna, because for a thousand reasons maybe, but what are we going to trust if we don't trust Krishna? These are the kind of questions we should ask. So then we, so sometimes we have to make choices. We have to will our faith sometimes. Okay, I know I have this problem and this problem, and I don't really, but Krishna, help me. I'm taking this step to you. I'm calling out to you. I know I'm weak. I know that my faith is weak, but please be merciful to me. So if we have some sincerity, even though we have a billion other things wrong with us, and even if our desires are somewhat in the wrong direction, like Dhruva's was, he's considered a great devotee, the greatest of devotees. And Krishna reciprocated with him in that way because of his fixedness and determination. Again, despite that he was a materialist. But he wasn't a materialist because he was turning to Krishna. Any other questions or comments?
We say that if we have material desires, what I'm asking is, if we turn to Krishna for him to fulfill our material desires, how is it that does he change our will? Because our will is to have material desires for him to fulfill our needs. So how is it that changes?
He works that part out as he will with Dhruva Maharaj. And in some cases, like with Dhruva Maharaj, it was very rapid how he made Dhruva basically free from material desires. And it was by giving them to him, but giving himself to him too. But in other cases, he can work more gradually too. Or sometimes he sort of half gives them to us, so we get a glimpse of what it would be if we had what we think we want. That's up to him how he does it, but he does it. He fulfills our desires in such a way that we gradually become purified and don't just keep increasing. And sometimes he deals with us in his own way, by giving us a very hard kick and taking everything away. But that's up to him. But that's when he's really pleased with us. That's what the Bhagavatam says. When Krishna is pleased with a devotee, he gives him so many things. When he's really pleased. And then sometimes when a devotee needs things for Krishna's service and he's detached, he'll give them still more. Did that answer your question?
Yes, so I suppose it's the will of the practitioner changes.
His desire changes. Krishna doesn't force it, but he's a good teacher. He's the best teacher. Like with Indra. Krishna never went over to Indra when Indra was trying to destroy all of Vrindavan. He didn't say, "You're such a fool, I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead." But he taught him in such a way by lifting Govardhan Hill that Indra realized it himself. So Krishna is the master teacher of all teachers. Any other questions or comments?
When he wants to
decide
on spiritual life, he opens the door, then we are going to be
I'm sorry, say that again.
Me and other devotees, even we don't know this when we decide to open the door, and it seems Krishna even before this doing all the work for us,
opening the door. It's not that we sometimes don't even realize the desire so much. Sometimes the other aspects of spiritual life, and that's so you can explain more about it.
This is referring to times in our life, maybe, that we know we don't want this, and we walk out the door of this, and we don't, and we want something better. There's so many stories of devotees like that too, who decided against some material way of life. And they were seeking. But they really didn't know what it was they were seeking. And then Krishna came to them in one way or another eventually and said, "It's me. Now let's see how honest you are that you were actually seeking." But that came later. First they walked out of material life and did not know where they were going. And in some senses, to leave a circumstance, I'm leaving, is easier. It's the easy part, to walk out of what you have, but you have to go somewhere. You cannot stay with nothing, and that's the harder part. But yet, it's such an amazing step if one sincerely walks out of one situation, in one form or another, based on the sincere desire to find the Supreme Lord, to serve Him, even though it may not be completely clear in the person's mind. I think I was like that very much. I had mentally walked out of, it was a long time ago, but I had mentally walked out of the material world in some ways. Of course, I was very well grounded in the material world, but I didn't really know what it was I wanted, but within me there was a trace of sincerity. And Krishna, at one point, he let me see that what the path was, and then I had to make it my own choice. I guess I was saying, and what the Bhagavatam was saying, that Dhruva walked out of the house, but he really didn't know what he was doing. He was actually dependent on Krishna catching him through Narada Muni. And then, in retrospect, which I think is what you were saying, you could see how Krishna was at work even back then, but you don't know that until way at the end. In fact, that's when you become a devotee, or you start becoming a devotee, that's one of the first things that you realize, I think, is that this was what your whole life was leading towards all along, even though you didn't know it all along. This is what your whole life was leading you to by the slaps, by the this, by the falling down on the, you know, skinning your knee, by the happinesses, by the distresses. It was really all quite orchestrated to bring you to the shelter of Krishna. Does that answer your question? Yes.
It seemed to me that when we are starting practicing devotional service, we have a material motivation mixed. So we have a lot of determination.
When we're strongly materially motivated in devotional service, we'll have a lot of determination.
Yes.
And then
slowly, gradually, maybe the desire maybe become more purified, or we have maybe less material desire. So
we lose our motivation. There's nothing in it for me anymore. Weak,
yeah.
Diminished. So what does that show us? That we're what? No, that we're not just materialists because we're performing devotional service. But that the positive needs strengthening. We need to develop our loving relationship with Krishna. That's what that tells us. So we have to learn more about Krishna and learn how to learn what it's like to do something for the pleasure of another. We have to learn how to love, to serve in love. So that's quite a high stage, in the sense of you realize that I don't really want anything in this material world, even though we haven't been completely caught by Krishna, say. But then gradually one has to become caught by Krishna. We have to fall in love. We have to understand that actually, in fact, it's actually true that there is a person, a supreme person, who is actually all attractive and very wonderful. And amazingly enough, he loves us despite everything. And then you see that he's actually dealing with us and being kind to us. And then you think, wait a second, this isn't by chance it's happening. There's actually some patterns here. There's a person. He's actually doing something to me as a person. He's actually showing me some affection. Now how am I going to reciprocate with that? So if we just continue, and that's always the most important thing, therefore, just to continue. So even, and those dry periods, those deserty spells where there's no material motivation, there's no spiritual motivation, that comes to everyone. And then how we deal with it, whether we decide we want to sleep all day long or eat all day long or whatever, or we try our best to serve Krishna, and then we have to wait to see how Krishna is going to reciprocate with us, because he's a person, as we are persons. Any other questions?
I know some addition to the open door. When you get out from this situation, I think this is some kind of change of reality. Because I remember in my when I was a little child, well, was some situation. He was jumping on the roof of house to some place, and I was sitting on the border of the roof, and all my friends was jumping and jumping and jumping and jumping, and I was very fear to jump. My first jump, I was sitting and sitting.
And then sitting, someone pushed you.
sitting
yeah.
For 1 hour.
Yes.
And it was so many thoughts about why you must jump. You see, it's working. It's okay.
What did you do?
Why you can't do it?
What did you do?
No, why I can't do it?
So you didn't do it?
Huh?
You did it
after 1 hour.
But you did
but,
it after 1 hour.
But it was changing of reality. You now, you feel some fear, and you come to make it. After it, it's not you make some, okay I go out, nothing else. No. Make your big change inside.
But you have to understand that your friends were all jumping. And you were sitting on the thing, so it's not everyone who just sits on the ledge for an hour or two. We're individuals. Some people just jump and fly.
Yeah.
and others sit on the edge for a long time and then jump, and then others sit on the edge for a long time, and when no one is looking, they turn around and walk back. So what I'm saying, that there's different individuals who take the tests and they open them differently. But yeah. Interesting.
Going out, you make many things in this moment. But in this moment, when you
walk through
full determination, I go. Not like a child his first step without father and mother, when he don't want to catch the hand of the father.
But yet the father and mother are still there, keeping an eye on them. Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Yes.
The confirmation of what I understood was correct is Dhruva Maharaj came towards Krishna with some ahankar, with some I came with, as everybody when we come to Krishna in the beginning, there's some ahankar in us which give us the first push or determination, and that ahankar in the time plucks the ability of others to correct us, and then Krishna bats us to a test, so our ahankar smashes and then we see correctly exactly where we are, and then start develop the real determination, the pure determination to really have this, what you said, of I want to go to Krishna Loka.
But I think that may describe one soul's path, but I don't think everyone has to take it that way, go that specific way. Because we're all individuals, and some people don't have much ahankar. They've gotten rid of it previously. Some people go and they want Krishna. This is described right in the Bhagavad Gita. Chator bita bhajante mam jnana sukhitinvajina artha gigyasavata ti jnani chabat bharitasava. There are four different kinds of people who approach Krishna. Dhruva was one of those. He was artati. He wanted material gain, but there are others. So they have different types of moods when they're approaching Krishna. So it's not that everyone can't take correction, too. Maybe I can't take correction, maybe that's my particular mood, but that's my particular mood. Other people are different, too. So now, I don't think what you're saying was wrong, but I think it was more a description of a particular path rather than the path. But clearly, the first part, when we're carrying a lot of unwanted things with us, it's like going up a mountain. And it's always difficult to go up, more difficult to go up a mountain. And then when you get to the top, going down the other side, going downhill is far easier. When we have a taste, we are pulled by that taste. So until we're free from our material desires, we won't be pulled by the taste of the sweetness of Krishna. Okay, did you want to say more?
So this is when the test comes?
When?
Naturally, we fear test.
We
the
test.
The
exam. No. Ruchi, taste.
You're speaking about taste. Okay.
Yeah.
I was speaking about the taste that when Krishna bats us through test.
Say again?
When Krishna bats make us go through test.
Through test, yes.
He's testing us.
Yes.
So the test smashes our false ego.
That's one thing a test may do, but the test may... A test mean... Before,
in reply to Gunavatar Prabhu's question, I was explaining that a test is also a self-test. So we have a chance to look at ourselves accurately and see how we're doing in relationship to giving ourselves fully to Krishna and surrendering to Him. So that's another purpose of the test. It's not only a test, a difficult situation that smashes our false ego and our feeling that we're the greatest and the most powerful. Not only that, well, that may be a result of a test. From what I've seen, that life has a way of smashing our false ego. Prabhupada even once said, an old man cannot be proud. Because the things that we're proud of, our strength, our beauty, whatever, we lose those one by one by one by one. When you lose all your teeth and you can't lift anything and you can't remember anything, how can you be proud? So an old man cannot be proud. And if we're lucky, we'll become old men. Because if we last that long. So our pride is removed. It's just the way the material nature works. The universe always will fail to cooperate with our desires to be the central figure. It will always not cooperate with that. There will always be obstacles. So it's meant to remove our pride, false sense of self, greatness. But the test isn't so much that, although that's a part of it, but the real test, in the way I'm speaking of it, is how much we're able to hold on to the lotus feet of Krishna and call out to Him for help, regardless of how our karma is manifesting to us at the moment, how Krishna's mercy is manifesting to us. So that's how I'm looking at tests more.
When we assess our determination and we see that when Krishna really shows us the mirror and we see that we don't have the determination that
yeah.
we thought of,
yes.
How should we continue on and really increase it?
Well, you have to make a at that point when you get your examination back and you fail every subject, then what do you do? Maybe different students will do different things. Some will decide that this is too difficult, I'm going to get a job, you know, selling newspapers somewhere. And other students say, this means I really have to start studying very, very hard. So this is the point of free will. So we have to choose what we want to do. So we're not alone always, so you know we can go to trusted others for help too, if we're fortunate enough to have devotees that we trust. We could say, this is my situation, Krishna has just shown me how insincere I am. How I can improve, please tell me. Or sometimes we know ourselves what the next step is. Sometimes there's something specific that's blocking us. And we know what we have to do. Can I ask more about it if I'm not answering correctly? Yeah. Some people get tests. And they see they have good grades and then they become lazy. And then the next time they get a test, they have terrible grades. So. Any other questions? So I got someone's hand is up here. It's not. Yes.
Narada Muni is the guru of Dhruva Maharaj. And he gives him instructions, go home. And Dhruva Maharaj interprets it. I was reminded of Prabhupada in his last days. He gave instructions to the devotees to be sure he's going around Govardhan. And some of the devotees interpreted his desire. So it's very difficult to understand this subject, so maybe you can talk about this.
Well, you know by the result that as soon as Narada Muni understood the determination of Dhruva, he gave him and Dhruva responded, he gave him the kind of instruction that he wanted. Yeah. So you asking, how do we know whether we're supposed to just follow or question? But Dhruva's situation was quite obvious in one sense, because there was no question of him following it. He couldn't go home, he was angry. And if we don't know what to do, what do?
Ask the Guru again.
Yeah, we have the right to ask questions. Say, dear Narada, your instructions are very good, but this isn't going to work for me. That's what Dhruva basically did. Yes. Sometimes you don't know it was a test until after. You don't get in it. In school, very often they tell us, oh, you're going to have a test on this subject. But in spiritual life, you get the test, and then you don't, and then you find out what the subject was after. You know, I think just simply being honest helps. Dhruva was so straightforward there. Let's see if I can find, there's a little funny quotation where Dhruva says, I'm not going to do this. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, see if I can find how he phrases it. Yeah, so Dhruva says, I'm so insubmissive because I have an intolerant Kshatriya spirit. This is the verse. Your instructions do not remain in my heart, which has been pierced by the arrows of Saruchi's harsh words. And this is our Chakravarti Thakur comments. Though you have given this nectar of peacefulness out of your mercy to an unqualified person like me, since I have the nature of a Kshatriya, my heart has been pierced and it is like a broken pot. Therefore, your instructions do not stay there. So there's the way that the metaphor is working. My heart is like a pot, an earthen pot, and it's cracked in so many pieces that when you put your instructions in there, it just flows out. It doesn't stay there. And then with irony, Dhruva says, let the weak, cowardly brahmanas drink the nectar of your instructions on peacefulness. Since I'm a Kshatriya prince with a fierce bravery, I cannot even glance on this instruction. Rawr. Let the weak, cowardly Brahmins drink the nectar of your instructions. Rawr. He's not a stereotyped disciple.
Maybe is that in those times 5-year-old children were not that tall, because Dhruva Maharaja sounds like a really fierce creature or something.
He was a little boy, only 5 years old.
Not with the same mind though. Same 5-year-old boy.
He definitely didn't have the same mind as I did when I was 5. I'll tell you that. It was a different time. But still, he was childish in his way. Okay, thank you very much. Tomorrow we shall continue and find out what happens next. What instructions will Narada give people? If you come, let's find out. I can tell you. Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Jai Hind.
cannot talk to me like that. I have the fierce nature of a mouse.